lovely to see some familiar faces and some new faces. I'm Amy from HeadTorch.
I'm Angus from HeadTorch.
And we're delighted to have Chief Superintendent Katrina Payton with us here today. And I'll be introducing her to you shortly. So happy National Wellbeing Month, everyone. It's still May. This is the last of our May events. However, we are having another event next Thursday, which will be the beginning of our first Thursday events. And Angus will tell us more about that toward the end of the toward the end of the session. We're HeadTorch. We do all things to enable a mentally healthy culture at work. So we work with every level within an organisation, senior leaders, management, frontline, we work with a wide variety of organisations, small, large, corporate, public, private, regardless, it's all to do with behaviour and communication and attitude and so on, and that's really our key focus. It gives me great pleasure today to welcome in Chief Superintendent Katrina Payton. She's been a friend of HeadTorch for quite a long time now. Katrina has been a policewoman since the age of 16. So that's just a couple of years, folks. Katrina is one of the most senior female police officers in Scotland. So it's great to hear all her insights. She's been at the forefront of some really high intense situations throughout her career, and through that she's had to use her vast amount of skills to deal with the general public. She is massively passionate, I suppose, about what we're doing, which is great, and sees the links between what we're doing and what she's doing in terms of, we're not medics and we're not counsellors. However, we are providing that sort of essential step, if you like, before it gets to that extreme stage, in order to enable people to be safe and to safeguard their own mental health and well-being. Katrina also has a couple of grown-up sons, I'm sure they take up plenty of our time. And have done, especially through lockdown. So, Katrina, please introduce yourself. I believe you brought some kind of objet.
If we could also just tell everybody we are recording this as well.
Oh, yes. Thank you. We are recording this, everyone. great. So, Katrina, do introduce yourself. What's your object that you are going to use to...
Okay, so welcome, or thank you for the warm welcome. I brought with me, my item is a baton. You will see it's not the kind that I would ordinarily have with me. I do have that if it's needed later, but I've got this baton. You see it's got a bit of ribbon on it, and I'll explain that in a second. So why did I bring a baton? So for me, it represents three things. It represents my love of sport. I wasn't ever good enough to go to the Olympics or Commonwealth Games, but I was always super sporty when I was growing up. So if it didn't involve jumping, running or tumbling, I wasn't particularly interested. And that certainly was my experience with policing for the first few years. So that worked well. It also reminded me and reminds me of and represents a happy childhood memory as part of a relay race. Coming in, having been passed the baton in the fourth leg, running around the track and crossing the line, winning the race, and then watching this man burst from the sidelines, pick me up in his arms and just congratulate me, thinking that obviously I had won the World Championships. But that was my dad, and such was his pride that I'd won that race. So it's a really positive memory. Now, at the time, it was a really negative experience because it wasn't a primary school race. It was my last year at high school. I was 16 and it was super not cool. And the third thing it reminds me of is actually about the power of words to persevere. I'm going to touch on that a wee bit when I speak later. But you see, my mum is a gifted speaker. Her and my dad had been missionaries in Congo and Africa for years, but my mum had her own ministry, speaking with women in particular. But when my dad took ill, he had dementia and Parkinson's, she cared for him for 3 years. And during that time, lost a lot of confidence and a lot of purpose and value in her life. And at one point when I went across to visit her and my dad, I had come across her looking through all of our old talks and sermons, about to shred them. And I said, stop, don't shred them. I want them. And she said, oh, that's in the past. You know, you're the future. And she said, in fact, she was always one for the analogies, I'm going to pass the baton on to you. So this was her visual analogy. And I said to her, well, you can't. She's quite horrified. What do you mean you can't? I said, Mum, the only person that can pass on the baton is someone who's running in the race. And Mum, you've stopped running. She just looked at me and kind of, oh, and went away. Well, several months later, my dad died, sadly. And 2 months after that, my mum got a phone call from someone looking to book her for an autumn conference. And she was halfway through saying, absolutely not, I don't do that anymore. That's what I used to do. And she heard my words saying, Mum, you've stopped running. And she realised that she was still in the race and she still had a race to run. She still had something to offer. So she went out and bought that baton as a visual reminder to her to continue to persevere. She did pass it on to me last year, because I was facing some challenges, and that was her passing on to say, remember what you said to me, there's power in persevering, you've still got a race to run and you're not at the finishing line yet, so keep persevering. So that's the three things it represents for me.
Fantastic, thank you Katrina. Yeah, passing on the baton, keep going and pass it on. So important, and also so important to remember that, you know, what might have been a negative memory from the past can still also be reframed and changed and made into create something positive from it, right? Wonderful. I'm just going to share the screen now with you folks, because we're going to hear a bit more now from Katrina, but I just wanted to let you know sort of the makeup of the session, if you like. So Katrina's going to speak to us now for up to about 15 minutes or so, and then she's going to pose us a question, and we will then go into breakout spaces. There'll be just a few people in those breakout spaces, and we'll consider her question in that space again for roughly 15 minutes, and then we'll all come back together and be invited to share your thoughts from your discussions, as well as posing any questions that you might have for Katrina. So Katrina is going to talk to us all about tactical advantage through changing thought. I'm just going to stop sharing the screen as well again, so we can see you all clearly. We can all see you clearly, Katrina. Over to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. So hopefully I'll be able to get across some of the key messages in the time that we've got together, but I'm just so thankful to have this time with you. As Amy mentioned at the start, you know, hugely passionate about the power that we each have within us to transform our lives and ultimately to transform our work environment. So why did I choose the title TACT? As you see, it stands for tactical advantage to changing thoughts. So it won't surprise you, given what I said about the power of words earlier, that I've chosen my words carefully in relation to my title. If you look at the definition for tactical, it says that it's something that's done in order to achieve. So it's active, it's done in order to achieve something. And if we think about achieve, what does achieving mean? It talks about, you know, successfully bringing about or reaching something through effort, skill or courage. And so that resonates with me both personally and professionally, because as a negotiator, which is one of the roles that I do in policing, the purpose is about bringing a safe resolution. We want to successfully change someone's behaviour in order to bring safety to them and to what's going on. And then so advantage, what does advantage mean? Tactical advantage, that's one thing, being tactical and doing something to achieve something. But advantage gives us the greater chance of success. That's what it says. So that's the really good news. If we are tactical about what we do, we've got a greater chance of success. And the third part there says changing thoughts. And when you look at the definition for changing, and don't worry, this isn't a presentation about dictionary definitions. We will move on. But actually, changing, when you look at the definition, talks about replace with something else, especially something of the same kind, and replacing it with something newer or better, substitute it for something else. And that one thing that we're talking about in the context of what I want to speak about is our thoughts. We can transform our work environment through transforming our own thoughts and helping those around us to transform their thoughts. We are things that would have been perhaps harmful to them can be something that is in fact helpful. And I've dealt with many crisis situations, but actually, and I've been in homes and I've been in the streets and I've been all in different environments. But I always say the greatest crisis and the most challenging battle that I've faced and that I face is the battle that goes on in people's minds. You know, the battle that is the battlefield of our mind, and that's where all of our thoughts are influencing what we do. And so that's how we came up with, or I came up with the mnemonic TACT. As you can imagine, policing, we talk a lot about TACT and tactics and tactical. It's very kind of policy. But actually, again, the final definition, I promise, when you look at TACT in the dictionary, it defines it as skill and sensitivity in dealing with others in difficult situations. Wouldn't that be great if everyone in our workplace had TACT? Wouldn't that be a wonderful environment if everybody had skill and sensitivity? How many policies and strategies would we not need if we had people with skill and sensitivity? So what I'm here to say, and if you hear nothing else for the next few minutes and remember nothing else, my plea to you would be start thinking about what you're thinking about. I know that's not very profound, but what I do know is it's massively powerful. There are times when, Amy mentioned it at the start, where we need medical or professional help for sure in extreme situations that we can face as individuals. But we each have the power to transform our lives, our work environment, and the lives of others through changing our thoughts. So why are changed thoughts so powerful? So this is where you get a whistle stop tour of negotiation, and it is just a whistle stop tour. I would love to unpack it more with you, and perhaps that would be something for the future. But in terms of negotiation, negotiators are called to deal with crisis situations, things like armed sieges, kidnaps, terrorists, suicides. They're obviously extreme examples, but actually we have crisis in our own lives. Excuse me. And that's usually associated with loss. It's usually associated with a double whammy. Sometimes it's the breakdown of a relationship, which means the loss of a home or the loss of finances. And actually what we describe in negotiation is that when people go into crisis, when their normal coping mechanisms don't work, and our normal coping mechanisms are based on our life experience, which equips us to a greater or lesser extent to deal with challenges in life. So my sister, for example, if I asked her to deal with any of those scenarios that I spoke about there, those extreme armed sieges or kidnaps, she would go into crisis, not because she's not capable and not because she's weak, but actually her life experience hasn't prepared her for dealing with situations like that. And when we face things that we don't expect and things that seem to be out of our control, we start to feel a sense of crisis. And sometimes we can feel like that. And I've often felt like that in a work environment, and I'll touch on that in a wee bit. COVID's a great example. COVID was unexpected, and most of it's out with our control. And that can be massively debilitating and will be as we unpack the implications for our mental health. But what it also means is if our normal coping mechanisms are different for each other, it means that our response to dealing with people who are facing a great crisis or even just a small crisis, then our response and our help to them needs to be different. So strategies and policies are really effective, and it's important that you have them in your work because it brings visibility and focus So, but while strategies and policies are good, personal connection is powerful. Personal connection is the power. And how do you do that in a virtual world? Can we still connect personally in a virtual world? You know, I think I've mentioned it before in the last time I spoke, you know, the reality is strategies and policies don't change the world, people do. Michael Jackson said that, remember, you know, if you want to change the world, take a look at yourself and make the change. That's how we start to change the world. You see, often most people focus on circumstances. COVID is a challenging circumstance, but actually the crisis in terms of how it's impacting on our mental health isn't COVID. It's our response and reaction to COVID. It's our response and reaction to what's happening that brings the crisis. And whilst that might seem quite accusatory, actually that's where the good news lies. Because Katrina Payton can't do anything about COVID. You can't do anything about some of the circumstances that you face because they're not in your control. But what you can control is how you respond and react to it and help others to respond and react to it. We don't have magic wands, but we can influence people's behaviour. Because what negotiation will tell you is it's people's behaviour that causes the crisis. The crisis isn't the circumstances that have led up to it. The crisis is the person holding the knife, is the person with the hostage, is the person standing on the bridge, is the work colleague who is pouring out their heart to you in front of you. That's the behaviour that is the crisis. And so the purpose of negotiation, as you would expect, is to influence and change behaviour. And again, I don't have time to unpack all of that today, perhaps for another day, but we use a behavioural change staircase. And there are five steps to it. And all I would say about those five steps is they take time to climb. So what I would suggest to you here today, and I will never stop saying it whenever I have the opportunity, time is the greatest gift you can give anyone in your work environment. Unlike what Jackie DeShannon said in her song that what the world needs is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. I would dispute that strongly, that it's not just love. We could all do with a bit of love, but we need time. We need time to be able to impact. And so it takes time to climb those stairs. And the stairs and the behavioural change staircase, without going into all of the steps, are rooted on a foundation of active listening. That's the basis for negotiation. And it does take time. But what is the purpose of the time? Why do we want to listen? And we speak in CT negotiation that, when I say CT, sorry, I'm using my police speak here. When we talk about counter-terrorist negotiation, one of the strap lines is seconds save lives, because it focuses the mind. If you think you've got seconds, and if seconds save lives, what are you going to say? And one of the things that we teach, and one of the most powerful things that you can give to anyone in your work environment and to yourself, is I'm listening. I'm here to listen to you, Angus. Don't say Angus if they're not called Angus. That kind of causes a bit of disconnect, you know, they just feel completely undervalued. You don't even know my name. But, you know, that's one of the most powerful things that you can say to someone is that, you know, I'm here and I'm listening. Because I'll give you now your whistle stop tour of psychology, and I know that there's medical people here today, so forgive me for the crudeness of my medical knowledge or my psychology knowledge, but in essence, in life, something happens, an event happens. We then have thoughts about that event. And as a result of those thoughts, we feel a particular way. And then as a result of those feelings, we behave in a particular way. So if we go back to the behaviour being the crisis, as a negotiator, I want to change behaviour. I can't change the event. I don't have a magic wand. We've acknowledged that. What I can do is influence thoughts and feelings, and if I can influence thoughts and feelings, then I can influence and change behaviour. But the key to the listening is to listen to what lies between the thoughts and the feelings, what lies underneath the thoughts and the feelings, and that's the meaning. And the meaning is rooted in our values and beliefs. You see, we can all face the same set of circumstances, but we'll deal with it differently. And we'll deal with it differently because it means something different to us. But be assured that the mind is a forerunner to all of our actions and behaviours. So let me give you an example. If my boss said to me, Katrina, I've got a critical piece of work for you to do, and you've been handpicked for this job, it's brilliant for your personal development. You're the only one that we believe that will be able to achieve this work. It's so complex, and we really need you to go away and do it. And I think, well, fantastic, I've been handpicked. You know, I'm super important. I've obviously got these skills. They've wanted me to do it. And I go and invest all of my time and energy and effort. I give up my own time personally. I put all that I have into achieving this critical piece of work for my boss, who I really don't want to let down. Fast forward. And clearly, this is an example that never happens, ever. But fast forward a wee bit, and I get all of this work done, and I go back to my boss and I say, look, I've managed to do, and I'm about to start talking through all that I'd managed to achieve. And the boss says, listen, thanks very much, but actually, I have to speak to somebody else, and they're going to pick that up. And in actual fact, the solution now lies somewhere else. And thank you very much for what you've done, but could you now go and look at X? And you just come out thinking, oh, put all of this work and energy and effort into this. And so, do you know what? I walk out that office and I feel completely and utterly used. And not for the first time. Because do you know what? Everyone in my life uses me. Everyone in my life just takes and never gives. And I feel utterly let down. And I feel foolish for believing them. And clearly I've got nothing to add, no value. And I feel utterly devastated. And so I now standing on the bridge and I say, well, what are you going to say to me as I contemplate life? And obviously you're now going to say, well, I'm listening. But actually, what are we listening for? You see, the circumstances is that the boss was inconsiderate, you know, in their approach. My thoughts that were associated with that was that I'd been used and I believed what the boss had said to me. And I feel utterly let down and devastated. And I'm standing on that bridge. And I'm worthless, and it reinforces what it means to me. And if you can identify the meaning, which is about low self-esteem and that sense of hopelessness, then your words come into play. This is where the words matter. And so time is so important when you're listening to, for that meaning. But it's also important because it allows people to express how they feel, and expressing how they feel reduces the impact of the emotionality and creates space for logical thinking. And when there's space for thinking, words are like seeds. They will, you plant them and they will blossom through time. That's where you can start to reframe things and replace even extreme thoughts with less negative. So for example, I might say to myself facing that situation, well, the boss is clearly focused on work, so separate it from the personal element. They're the inconsiderate ones. And actually, that's not good leadership. So it's their issue, not mine. You worked hard, you vested your skills, you believed because you're loyal and caring. And your boss, like some others in your life, doesn't appreciate your value. And that's deeply disappointing. And right now that hurts. Deeply disappointing people aren't devastated people. And and what you've done is immediately reduced the extreme emotion. Talking about right now actually plants a seed to say there's a time beyond right now. The present isn't permanent. And so I always say when we're having conversations with people at work, reduce your expectations around. We never take people from feeling really hopeless to feeling really hopeful. We just might make them feel less hopeless. And is that easy? Of course it isn't. But as I said before, time isn't just the greatest gift, it's the greatest tactic, because it allows people to express how they feel. And certainly, I listened to Jeff a couple of weeks ago that was speaking to you, and he mentioned about a crisis that he had faced in his life. And he spoke about his friend facing the same situation, but sadly his friend took his own life and completed suicide. And he said the difference was that he had been prepared to have a conversation. And that's what negotiation is, a conversation with a purpose, because it plants seeds and it reframes things. Remember my mum? all those months later, could remember me saying to her, "Mum, you've stopped running." Words plant seeds. They don't blossom immediately, but they do blossom eventually. And all I'll say in closing, to allow you to go and think about some of these things, I know a lot about crisis intervention. I know a lot about the challenges that we face, but knowing it, even teaching it, isn't enough. I'm not immune. I can feel overwhelmed. I can feel hopeless. I can feel like I achieve nothing. And my words matter to me too. If I feel that way, I need to start consciously thinking about what I'm thinking about. What would I say to my sister if she said all of those things to me? Would I reaffirm that she is hopeless? Or would I actually start to reframe her words? So if it's important for her, it's important for me. So what does this mean for you in your work environment? So for me, it would be about saying that I have, with overwhelming evidence, the confidence to say that professionally and personally, changing our thoughts does work. So my question to you as individuals is, what are you going to do to put tact into practice in your personal and professional life? I've got some options and some thoughts, but I want you to think about that and to try and unpack some of that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Katrina. Lots. You packed it in, as ever. Fantastic. Yeah, I love that. Time is the greatest gift you can give anyone in your workplace. Fantastic. Great. So we're going to go into breakout groups now, and then we'll all reconvene a little later on. You might want to take a photograph of this screen. Remember, when you get into your groups, do put your camera on and do unmute yourself.
So it's now your opportunity to share some of the thoughts, key points that came up for you during your discussion there, and equally to ask any questions you might have for Katrina. So who would like to share some thinking or ask a question?
I've got a question if no one else has. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I'd like to ask Katrina about the effect of COVID. And as you all know, there are some people who actually got coronavirus who now have what's called long COVID, which is physical problems that have related long after the disease is supposed to have gone. I'm just wondering if, as a society, we aren't all affected to a degree by long COVID, whether we've actually had the disease or not, and whether the whole business of tact and listening isn't going to be more important than ever in the next year or so.
Yeah, no, thanks. And a great question, and kind of great analogy to bring from the kind of physical element into the mental health impact. And I would say what I would suggest in terms of the challenge that we faced in society, aside of the physical element around the ill health and the tragedy around the death, is actually we faced that loss of freedom and that loss of connection. And through that, we lose the opportunity to express how we're feeling, whether that's through going to the pub or going to the cinema or visiting family and friends. And our communication, even on meetings, is very formal through agenda. So we don't have the same conversations that take place at the start and the end of meetings that we might have done previously in work. So when you've got unexpressed emotions, what you then have, they don't stop taking effect. And we've actually seen a lot of people who have real emotional, which seem to be extreme emotional reactions to things that are happening just now in society, through protests or whatever else. But a lot of that is because people are desperate to release some of this, frustration that they have about life. And what I would say 100% is, listening is powerful. Taking time to listen to people, to understand what's driving their behaviour, is the only way to be able to identify how you can actually try to reduce some of that extreme emotion that's attached to it and help them reframe some of the things and help them see some of the things that they can take control of in their life again. So in short, the answer is yes, we do, and we will have a problem as we move, not just beyond it, but as we continue to move through it. And listening is massively important, being able to change our thought process.
Thanks. Thanks, Katrina. Thanks, Randall. Lynn, you've got your hand up. Do you want to unmute yourself?
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, which Lynn?
There's two Lynns.
Well, I've got Lynn with L-I-N.
That's me. Hi, I'm Lynn, the L-I-N Lynn. Hi. Sorry, other Lynn. First of all, thank you for that talk earlier. It really resonated with me. I wish I had that talk before COVID hit. Would have been really useful for the workplace for me. I am a person who did have to work at home, which was fine. I'm absolutely fine with that. I was so grateful to be able to do that and spend more time with my family. So actually, I had some really good benefits, you know, and that's a very selfish thing to say. And I try not to say it too often because I know what people have been through. I did not lose anyone. I just had this extraordinary year and a half or however long. But one of the things is my job was very different before lockdown, and it evolved to, I work for a care home company, and my job changed from helping them find a care home to listening to people and for them begging me to let them come and see their loved ones throughout lockdowns, because their loved ones were elderly, time was an issue, there was no touching, they may have dementia and were losing recognition, begging, screaming, crying. And I went from, you know, just being a softly spoken, quite sweet person helping you find a care home to just listening. And I was using tact unconscious. I didn't even know about that, but I was using it through my work. I was growing it within my work. And all I did was listen. And every now and then I put in a couple of words, which I knew would help, but I really just had to listen. One thing when you started talking is that I noticed what I haven't been doing is using tact on myself. Because I have to say, it almost broke me that year, not because I wasn't happy at home, but because of what I had to listen to. And I just didn't want to grow old, and I didn't want to go through what they were going through. And I still don't. And there are some really bad thoughts that I have sometimes, but because of the words I use, because the hopelessness I've heard. But actually, the last week, since the 17th, sorry, a bit longer now, 10 days, we've had the restrictions lifted. I told someone the other day they could hug their mum. I almost broke down, not on the phone. I walked away from it. They haven't seen them for a year and a half. I haven't seen my family for a year and a half. And it's just, there was hope. And it was a moment where I felt that I actually did something worthwhile. But that tact, we have to put it to ourselves, because we're doing it to other people, because they're in front of us and it's a physical thing, but our mindset is not physical. It's just this thing in our head. We can't see it. Therefore, we don't approach it. Mm. But when someone's in front of you and they're breaking, you can physically see that, and then therefore you help. So I just want to say thank you for that talk.
And all I would say just in response to that is, you know, this isn't a, you know, once in a lifetime or a, you know, quick fix. This is a habit of a lifetime. This is about saying, you know, I always think, you know, if you plant seeds, they either go into weeds or blossom, and that's the same with our thoughts. And what I would say, you know, when you take time to go through and understand what you're thinking and start to plant more positive seeds of thought, that doesn't stop negative ones from popping up again. You need to keep weeding your garden. Well, if your garden's in like mine anyway, you certainly need to. But you know, you need to clear your mind of the weeds at times, but not be frightened of them. And often what we try and do is we compound our negativity because we're negative. So we're just like, I'm feeling terrible and I shouldn't feel terrible. And, you know, actually there's power in negativity as long as we're able to identify and capture it and express it. Because when we express it, we then provide and can see for ourselves the reasons why. And when we can understand, with understanding comes hope. And I always say, you know, light always overcomes dark, no matter how small the light is. Hope always overcomes hopelessness, no matter how small. So, you know, you've got a real opportunity. And I would say absolutely. And that's why I said, you know, people change lives, people change the world. And that starts with you. So take that time, write down what you're thinking, why you're thinking it, and plant those seeds.
That's brilliant. Got some great points there. And thanks so much for sharing your story, Lynn. And now the other Lynn Pritchard.
Hi there, thanks. I was just going to reflect on.
Sorry, do you want to say, as I should have said before, do you want to say where you're calling from, what organisation you're with, Lynn?
Hi there, I work for the Scottish Government and I'm in Health Workforce Directorate. So you can imagine what it's been like probably over the past year. And we touched on in our conversations a bit around culture and even the differences between Western and Eastern culture and the difference between that group mentality and individual how some of that has played into some of this stuff. And we also touched on the problem when crisis hits is that it's very, very delivery action focused. And we at the time when we need more than ever to really focus and think about and notice what we're thinking, we're not always able to. And I suppose the question I had for you was, how do you make time for that? Because it's something that I am working on here in the government, and I have a bit of responsibility for sort of learning and development of the leadership cohorts here. And it's very much something that I'm working on, but equally, I can't change the workloads. I can't change the demands that are coming in to those people on a day-to-day basis. So I can only nudge the culture towards a slightly different way of prioritising time and thinking about these things. So, yeah, I was just interested in that making time and changing cultures to recognise it, because I don't think anyone would disagree with what you're saying. It makes absolute sense.
You know, and it's a great question. And it's, as I say, you know, that like that song says, you know, time is the one thing that we just don't have enough of. That is for sure. But again, for me, the importance is about creating that space. So for me in the work environment, particularly just now, for example, when we're doing so much virtually, is making sure that there is time for conversations that are not meeting based, that are not agenda driven, that they are just about, so, you know, describe to me, you know, what a great day would be look like for you. Because if I don't understand what's driving my, you know, the people that I work with, you know, I can't begin to start to connect with them in a way that helps them be able to move beyond some of the challenging circumstances. Certainly, in that, you know, for me, that's really important in terms of my habit. But for you within, for example, Scottish Government, policing is very similar. We're very focused on, there's a problem, we need to solve the problem. Let's, you know, throw the horses, the dogs, the, you know, firearms or whatever else, and let's, you know, deal with this problem. Actually, if you do it that way, you'll stop it temporarily, but it'll come back again. Yeah. Solving the problem, and I'm not saying these things aren't effective, of course, but solving the problem, you have to be prepared to dwell in negativity. You have to be prepared and comfortable with dwelling in uncomfortable situations and environments. When you're comfortable, and that's what I try to create in work, I try to create an environment where it's okay to be confused and it's okay to have ambiguity and it's okay to not really know what we do next until we take the time to listen, so that when we do move forward, we're actually solving the drivers of the problem, not just the action of the problem. And to drive that in culture is to try and show it in small steps to people how it works small, and then they'll understand how it, you know, it happens big. And of course, again, if it was that easy, I'd have transformed all of Police Scotland. You know, but you know, I can only influence what's in my gift to influence, and that gives me the get out. You know, I'm in an environment with people in front of me. That's who are the people in my life that I need to work towards.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. I think that's a great tip, Katrina, starting small. We advocate Tiny Habits, which is a process set out by a chap called BJ Fogg, an academic at Stanford. And it's very much about that, you know, small steps, and keep repeating those small steps. Yeah. Fantastic. I wonder if Rodney Eyre is here. I wonder if you'd like to say a little bit about what you were talking about. Again, it touches on the culture thing because you were telling us, if you don't mind me sharing, that what you're good at there at Mitsubishi is actually having lots of conversations. The thing is to make them meaningful conversations. Do you want to share a little bit more about that, Rodney?
No.
I've just jumped on you.
Hiya. Yeah, so Rodney, I'm Mitsubishi Electric. We're a manufacturing company based in Livingston. We've got 1,500 people. I was just saying that, slightly different from a lot of people's experience, we closed for 4 weeks, but we kept operating all the way through the various difficulties. At the start of the COVID pandemic, we were 1,200 people. At the end of it, we're now already up to 1,500 people. So we're growing and growing. But I work within a Japanese culture, and the Japanese culture is very much based on large levels of communication, somewhat unnecessary in some cases. And it's also a consensus-based environment, so that sort of top-down approach it is not part of our normal culture, although it's very part of the UK culture. So we are starting to see mental health issues coming through a lot of our engineers, especially just with the stress and pressure of everything that's going on just now, and also the stress and pressure of people who are working from home and getting disassociated. And we've been... In Japanese culture, it is not a normal thing to expose or a normal thing to work on. So it's becoming quite difficult within the organization, although the guys are doing a great job of cross-boundering that cultural understanding between how Scottish people generally behave versus how the Japanese people generally behave. So it's becoming quite interesting. By the way, I'm a good friend of Stevie McAllister, so the angel of death. Yes, I know him very well.
Yeah, we've been in a few jobs together.
Yes, I'm pretty sure you have. Yeah, so that I suppose that's the big one. A lot of these conversations we have with Amy are very much don't necessarily account for the culture of the organisation or the culture of the people and the culture of the demands on the people. And Lynn there was also saying she was 5 years in Japan and she could see the difference in how you would approach something like this as well. Yeah. I don't know if you've come across that within your Saving People's Lives episodes.
Yeah. Thanks, Rodney. If you could just respond briefly for us, Katrina, I'm just aware of time. Thanks, Rodney.
We can pick up, offline, but we've done a lot of cross-cultural work. I've been across doing, a number of workshops around, so understanding what does translate. And I don't just mean from a language perspective, I mean from a behaviour and, society and culture perspective. So we've done a lot of work around that. So happy to talk to you about it offline.
Lovely, thank you.
Great.
Thank you very much, everyone. And a huge thank you again to you, Katrina. Thanks so much for giving us all your time today. And here we are. Sorry, I couldn't see anyone. It was a bit discombobulating. Yes, thank you so much for giving your time, your input, your thoughts. I think there's lots to take away there, lots of great reminders in terms of, how we can all put tact into practice. And as you say, both for ourselves personally and taking responsibility for ourselves personally each day in order to push that out to the wider workforce. So thank you so much, Katrina. Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you, Katrina. And we have next week, we have our very first Thursday events. These will be running every month now. And next week, we have Nick Payne, who is on-trade sales director at Budweiser Budvar. We met Nick originally when he worked for BrewDog. And he's a real mental health champion. And he's got really, really practical tips on workplace mental health and how to put it into how to make it happen. So Nick's going to be there. Come along, it will be a cracker as well. And if you like what we do, follow us on LinkedIn, keep an eye out for us. These events are running on a regular basis and it would be great to see you all there. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think also somebody asked about the recording. We will be sending that out to you shortly.
Yeah, plus a podcast. There will be podcasts going on the website.
Yeah, so you can watch it all in multicolour or just listen to it as you go for a walk.
Oh dear.
Thank you very much, everyone. And thank you once again, Katrina, for joining us. Not Enjoy all. The rest of your day, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone. Bye. Bye-bye.
That's it. Fantastic. Kat, thank you very much. That was wonderful.
Thank you so much, Kat.
That was great.
No. Always a pleasure and a privilege being with you guys. Men I can do to help or support all the stuff that you are doing. Just a phone call away, but no, hopefully it's
well, thank you
back in terms of what you were looking for. But